Hey, what's poppin', people? All right. It's Friday night in the basement, and we're in short supply tonight. It's just me and Jay, but it's a celebratory mood as the new website is up. Jay's been humping away down here for he's having sex with someone in the basement. I'm working on the website nonstop.
Yep. I think that's why we scared everybody off. There was work to do.
Yeah, there were people here, and Jay just wanted to screw and was trying to get stuff done. It's crazy.
It's been a long week, plus all the election buildup. Get a release somehow.
Definitely. No, that was important. I got to take care of that at some point. Actually, that's a huge lie, as anyone knows who knows anything about this program. Jay's been working on the website for quite a while. It is up, and other than a couple glitches, the news is good. It looks fantastic. Congratulations, Jay.
Thanks, Will. We all chipped in. You had to say, this looks good, that looks bad, move this, move that.
So, that was my job.
Yeah.
You did the work.
You directed well.
And Joey and Brandon and Mark, and we all had our two cents to throw in, some more than others. But bottom line is it's done. And there's even a donate button now, which many of you have been amazingly, people have, in my opinion, intelligently asked for a donate button because they know that we can survive only so long without any financing. And that's something we didn't even trouble ourselves with for really the first 3 or 4 months because I thought building the show and having a good show was the only thing. I mean, if there's no show, then what is there to donate to? And if we... You know, if we started, I think, if we worked on the financial part when we had 5,000 people listening, you're not selling the same thing to advertisers or to anybody that you're selling once you've built a reasonably sized audience. And now we've got a pretty solid, consistent audience. You guys seem to like the show, like the podcast.
I would say so. Do you see PayPal donations are coming in already very quickly? Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean,
it's been like a half hour. And we're already...
We just got another one, didn't we?
We got quite a few more already.
No shit.
Jeez.
Well, that's fantastic. Let's see. Oh, I see. Eric Kadecki's jumped into the fray. And Kern Malinovich, something like that.
Kerry Malinovich.
Kerry Malinovich, yeah.
Yeah, David Barr.
Thank you. At the risk of this sounding like a begathon... Thanks to all of you. I tweeted out the first 7 people who were in there. I mean, somebody was in there in 5 minutes for crying out loud.
Yeah, outrageous.
I tweeted it out, and boom, all of a sudden, we're rich. Not really. Not yet. We are going to need some help from those of you who listen and can afford to do it. As I've mentioned many times, didn't want to do the subscription thing because some people just can't afford to participate, and I understand. It's okay. It's no crime to be in a financial position that you can't donate to stupid things like podcasts or frivolous things like podcasts. But a lot of you don't consider this frivolous. You consider it a very important part of your life, and you want to contribute insurance to its continued existence, and you're smart people. And I trust that we don't have to talk about this too much. I think we're going to do very well, judging from all the emails from people over time who have suggested that we needed to do this, and we knew we needed to do it, and now it's there, and here we go.
Hopefully. Well, it's like you said, there are a lot of costs to doing a show that people, I'm sure they know that this can't just be put up for free, but, you know, there's all the studio equipment, the furniture, the everything. It started out as an empty room. It's hard to believe it's what it is already in a short period of time, but...
I know, when I look at the list of shows, and I was reading through them, like, God damn, we have really churned a lot of shit out in 6 months. A lot of, last night we had about 6 call outs.
Yeah.
And it's a lot harder than it is when you're in a radio station and you've got more bodies around and you have more resources. But I think we found a way to make this pretty amusing. And we have a couple of advantages, thank God, because there are a lot of disadvantages. But we do have the lack of FCC oversight. Which contributes greatly in terms of freedoms of language and freedoms of subject matter. And I think it creates a looseness and more of a real it's just more of a real broadcast than you can do on terrestrial radio, because all that freedom, I think, loosens everybody up to the point that you just get, it just is better. It's more fun to listen to. It's more real.
And there isn't a lot of stress and pressure, you know, from above. You don't have people coming in barking at us, you can't say this, you can't do that. You've been a great boss, Drew. I'm sure everybody on the show would say, you know, kind of thing. So it's worked out well.
I know. I hardly think of myself as a boss, but to some small degree. But, yeah, that's true. The only pressures are, of course, the family members who are going, why are you spending all that time in that guy's basement, for crying out loud? It seems to be too productive.
What about the layout of the site? I don't know if you want to touch on that real quick before we jump into everything.
Yeah. I always think explaining websites is kind of crazy, because obviously you got to go on there and see it. But there are some things that are worth pointing out.
Well, we tried to make it as clean and simple and easy as possible, so you can do everything from the homepage. There's a lot of websites that are way too busy. You know, you start clicking on crap and you get buried in the site. You don't know where you are. So we just wanted to keep it real clean, simple, and easy. So there's along the right column there in the sidebar, there's all the social media buttons and email buttons. So you can just hit the email and throw email to the show right there. Of course, the donate button, which is already generating a lot of traffic already. It's great. There's also a couple of drop-down menus on the right, one where you can filter the episodes by host. So, like, if, for example, you wanted to see the episode that, Darren McCarty was here, or, you know, filter
Charlie Sheen, Lenny Dykstra,
the Tom Mazzaway episode, something like that. You can filter the list of episodes that shows up on the homepage based on, you know, host is one option you've got. You can also sort them by month. So if you want to look up all the episodes from June or July, that kind of thing, you can look it up over there. Underneath that, we threw a couple Twitter feeds in, one for the show Twitter feed, one for the Red Shovel Studio House feed is underneath that, and then the Facebook feed is under that as well. And then you have a list of all the episodes on the left side of the screen there. And if you roll down towards the bottom of that list, if there's more shows to show underneath that, there's an older posts link to click on, which will list even more episodes. So it's whole idea is it's real straightforward, clean, and easy is the idea. But if you got any critique, email them to Drew. Drew will handle it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll edit it and give it to Jay.
But
if something's missing, I don't know what it would be, because I'm like you, I want something simple.
Yeah. Well, we talked about putting surveys up too, because with the merchandise line coming up, we talked about maybe putting some surveys up where people could kind of give us some ideas on what they want to have, or surveys for show material or show ideas, things like that. You know, we just talked about throwing surveys up.
Yeah, and a lot of that discourse takes place on Facebook,
right,
and a little on Twitter. But you know, as far as I really like the black and white too. It just seems like it's it's better to look at.
Yeah,
and the Twitter's right there, which I like, and the Facebook. So yeah, I mean, you know, it's a website. Not going to spend your life there, but when you do go there, it's got everything you need. So there. So anyway, it's Friday night. The world's going half mad, in my opinion. It's just, you know, we have CNN on and Fox News on and MSNBC on so much that anytime you turn on any of those three, you realize that there's some real crazy shit going on. Like, they don't have a shot of it right now, but if we flipped over, we're on CNN. If we flipped over to any of the other two, I'm sure we'd see people in the street in Oakland or Los Angeles or Chicago or maybe even Detroit. And I'm not sure. It's just really funny. You've got one revolution in that Trump was elected, which was pretty revolutionary. I mean, really, the insanity of it hasn't sunk in with me. The Cubs win the World Series and Trump is elected president within 10 days. Holy shit. But now the election of Trump has created a new revolution of people who are saying, this can't be. He's not my president. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, when you want to change something, that's how it has to happen. So this is what I thought we'd see if Trump got, or if Hillary got elected. I thought we'd see a lot of shittiness in the streets and a lot of complaining, a lot of whining. And there's some certainly legitimate complaints about this candidate. There would have been about the other one, too. And that's what I think is kind of surprising to me. Is that the two sides don't see that they actually feel so much alike about the other candidate.
Right.
And it was really just a matter of which one is hated less.
Well, in like what level of protest would happen if Clinton had won? You think you'd see the exact same thing?
I'm not sure exactly, because I think Trump voters are older. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It might be very similar. Probably not, though, because it seems like it's younger people.
So you think it'd be like smaller crowds but more volatile if Trump had...
Probably more. It wouldn't be people in the streets at night. Mm-hmm. I don't think it'd be that. But you'd probably see a bunch of megaphones out in maybe smaller groups during the day. I don't think I see it in the streets. But I don't think that the whining would be any less. Mm-hmm. It'd just be different. But some of the stuff that's blowing my mind, and I hate talking about this. It's just that it's in our face all the time, 24/7, because it's really the fact that Trump won, I think, makes it an even bigger story. And there's so many stories that have resulted from it. And we always try to stay kind of with what's going on. I'm just so tired of people being pissed. Oh, you like Hillary. Oh, you like Trump or whatever it might be. People are just so angry about the whole thing, which is nobody's fault.
What I don't get, though, is like I can't see spending this amount of time outside, like the shot that we're looking at right now.
Yeah, yes.
To spend that kind of time out there.
Say where that is, by the way.
Atlanta.
Okay.
Over in Atlanta, and everybody's just standing out there. Sheriffs are just standing, arms over chest, keeping them from getting any further. But I don't understand what this is not going to – I mean, are they expecting Trump to say, okay, I concede, this isn't going to – I don't understand. It's one thing to protest and, have something to say like this, but the amount of time that these people are spending right now, I don't know. I couldn't do it myself.
Maybe no, do you have –
It's got to be just me.
You have two jobs and you do this, so you have no time. I have no job, but this takes up a lot of my time. Honestly, I have no time to be out. If it didn't matter who won, I wasn't going to be happy. I wasn't for either candidate.
That's just it.
But if I was really a Hillary Clinton lover, or I was really a Donald Trump lover, I was a partisan, I still would not be out there, 'cause I don't have the fucking time.
Right.
I don't. And, whether it'll do any good or not, I think, this might be good in a way. Trump had an obnoxious tweet last night when he said, the media caused this, paid protesters or some stupid shit like that, mm-hmm. which is really dumb.
Yeah.
He's the president-elect now, and I think he's figured that out, because I noticed the press conference he had with Obama, I thought he acted like a president. Mm-hmm. He didn't seem like Donald Trump. He had a conciliatory speech the night he won, which is good. All that was good. And then he sends out this shitty tweet that sounded like the old asshole Trump. Media, whatever. This morning he had a better tweet. It was something to the effect that protesting is good. It shows how much people care, which is true. Mm-hmm. But I'm with you. Who has time to spend 5 hours in the streets every night? And that's why it's young people, because I think 20-year-olds have more time. College students, a lot of this centers around college campuses, like Wayne State's had some protests going on.
Yeah,
Ann Arbor, East Lansing. But you do see a lot of people in Los Angeles who are on Route 101. There's a lot of people vandalizing cars and storefronts, which is just stupid.
Yeah.
If you want to really completely destroy your point, in fact, I don't even know those people are really protesting. Are they protesting or are they just being idiots?
Well, they said, I'm trying to remember if it was in California or Seattle, they were saying that a lot of people were screaming at people to do a peaceful protest, and there was just a group of 20-some that were causing a lot of damage in one particular protest, and they're the ones that got arrested, and the cops are, at least thankful that the peaceful protesters, they asked them to move out of the area so they could sort them out, but I think there's so many people in that group that want to be peaceful protesters. And
I think there are, too. No, I think there are a lot of people who are very serious about it. I'm skeptical as to whether all voted. But
yeah. They said, half of registered voters voted this time around?
It wasn't even half, was it?
It wasn't even half.
It's usually way below that. There were some disappointing aspects of the turnout, which I think certainly cost Hillary Clinton. But there's stuff I'm finding out about this post-election that is, first of all, just ridiculous. The suicide hotline is way up. Mm-hmm. People are calling. They want to kill themselves over the election. Are you fucking kidding me? Now, if these are people who are just really depressed or they have manic depression and this is just one more thing to set them off, that's one thing. But if these are people who are really feel they need to kill themselves because Donald Trump is president, that is ridiculous. I'm sorry. That's just ridiculous. What I also find ridiculous is I'm reading about kids 8-9-year-olds going to school crying the day after the election. What the fuck is that? What? First of all, if the parents are getting the kids so wigged out that they're crying, or they're really that invested in it, it's good to know a little bit about the election. But this one, I don't know how much you really want your kids to know. But getting your kids so worked up, or letting them watch enough TV that they get all fucked up about it, that they're crying in school, that's ridiculous.
Well, you remember the guy that we talked to said that his son was reading Breitbart?
Oh, yeah.
And keeping up with everything.
Well, we knew that was complete bullshit.
In that
case, I think that was crap.
Well, maybe the kids are crying because they hear mom or dad raging. If Trump doesn't win, somebody's going to get it, so maybe that's what the kids are scared about, just hearing their parents raging at home. They don't know any different.
That may well be. These kids ought to be on PlayStation, or they ought to be out playing, doing whatever kids do. Riding their bikes as if kid rides bikes
say,
now.
What are you talking about?
Playing kick the can.
Pokemon Go and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they ought to be doing what kids do. There should be no pressure on an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old, and they for damn sure should not be worked up about the election.
God, when's the last time you've seen a kid in your neighborhood going up and down the street on a bike?
Isn't that weird?
It is. It's really weird.
That's kind of pathetic, I think, honestly.
It is.
Riding bikes was a blast. I love riding bikes when I was a kid.
Well, I mean, I know you haven't had, well, I mean, you've got kids.
We were like a gang.
But, I mean, they've got, nowadays you have to arrange play dates with your friends. You don't just go down to Bobby's house and see if he's home and go play. You have to get a hold of his parents and see if you can arrange a play date.
Yeah, our neighborhood when I was a kid was an instant football. A football game was 5 minutes away. You just had to ring a few doorbells and you played ball.
That's exactly it.
And, I hate to sound like that guy. Oh, the way we did it was so much better. But I don't understand what has happened in that regard. Why parenting has become so organized and kids with these activities are scheduled every second of their life. They do need a little time to fuck around. And you really have, I think, a tale of two things in that regard. Kids who are overscheduled in some cases, this isn't everybody. Some people have a fairly normal childhood. And then you have these kids that just go down in the basement and they're on a PlayStation for 10, 12 hours a day. That's pathetic, too. I mean, there ought to be something in between, I would hope.
Well, we can hear from one that we talked to yesterday. Kind of probably sums it up.
You're so mature.
Yes. She's from Froco, right? Was that Farrah's associate?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm related to famous people, but I'm not related to Farrah.
Yeah, it's our friend, our new friend. She's related to Bum Phillips and Wade Phillips, if you missed the podcast.
I'm related to Wade Phillips and Bum Phillips, and you're bothering me at work.
And you're what? What'd she say?
You're bothering me at work. You remember when we were talking to her, you heard all those little music nuances that were playing in the background,
yeah.
Which is probably her getting text messages, alerts, because it was the same bleep.
Right.
So it doesn't sound like she's really all that hard at work.
No. So. Is Wade Phillips going to come kick our ass? I mean, that was really, I've never heard anyone say that before. I'm related to famous people. You better get off the phone. Leave me alone.
You guys kept calling her out saying that was Farrah, and she came back with,
"This isn't Farrah."
Yeah. No. She'd sound a little like her, especially when she said, "You're so immature."
Well, then, too, when we called back because we thought we got disconnected.
Yeah.
And it was...
No, you didn't get disconnected.
Oh,
I hung up on you because you're being very immature. You're like, what, 30?
I've never heard that before, that we didn't get disconnected. No one's ever said that before on the podcast. I'm just so shocked.
Amazing.
Okay, so yeah, this is really crazy. It's not just the 8-year-olds, the 10-year-olds. There's some real bullshit going on. I saw a videotape last night, I think it was in Chicago, of three black guys kicking the shit out of this fat white guy, yelling at him that he voted for Trump, and then one of them's trying to steal his car at the same time. Either he's trying to steal something out of his car, and the guy runs to his car, he's, "Get out of my car," and some guy comes from behind and just whacks him in the head. I mean, they just beat the shit out of this guy. And that, that as much as anything demonstrated what's wrong here. I don't know why people can't see that both sides really, really, really disliked the other candidate. In a lot of cases, dislike both candidates, just dislike one a little less. So, you know, it's unfortunate somebody has to be a loser in this thing, and I don't know why people are taking it. I mean, people are really butthurt over this election. And I know it has a lot to do with some of the stuff that Trump has said. I'm not letting him off the hook by any means. But this business of gloating because your person won, or calling people who voted for Donald Trump stupid, which is going on a lot. Amy Schumer had a post that I thought was really, I'm just surprised somebody that depends on the public would be that clueless. I mean, she really was implying that the Trump voters are dumb. And there's another, somebody else was saying the same thing. Who was it? Actually, I don't even know this chick that well. She's got a show. Samantha B. Is that who it was?
Oh, that sounds familiar. I think that's right.
Yeah, did you see that? It was a Daily Mail story. But anyway, this thing is really, really a mess. I suspect it will calm down because people don't have that much time. They have this much time, but they don't have that much time. I think this going out in the streets every night is going to get kind of old.
But don't, I mean, if going beyond the election thing, it seems like everybody is pissed. I mean, look, you know, anytime there's a police officer shooting, there's a huge riot. Anytime anything happens, there's this gigundous riot. So it seems like people are overly pissed off about stuff. They're harboring a lot of anger. So then we just need some, like, collective outlet for everybody to get their anger out instead of waiting for opportunities like this to smash up the town, loot the place like that. It just seems like everybody's, like I said, harboring all this anger all the time, you know?
Hey, Jay, not to interrupt, but we're getting a lot of comments about people wanting to donate on their phone.
Oh.
Can they donate on their phone?
They should be able to.
I guess they can't.
Okay.
13 comments about the phone. Okay. Obviously, we need to hear this stuff, so.
Yeah. Well, we'll look into it.
We will. Yeah, absolutely. Let me just send this out.
It's only been up for an hour. It's doing well. Yeah. There's still a lot of stuff coming in, so.
But yeah, but the phone thing should work?
It should, but I will double check it.
Okay, cool. Do we want to take a break and check it, or in the edit, or should we just wait till afterwards?
We can wait till afterwards. Okay, cool. I can look at it while we're going here too.
Okay, Jay, you're multitasking.
Well, I know we wanted to do a show tonight, like you said, and get the website up and get donations up. Yeah, and, you know, so
I know we should have blown off the show, but I really wanted to, you know, get it out there that we had the website up and the donation. That you could donate, and there's other stuff coming too. So there's a lot of excitement in the offing. The 15 or the 25 year anniversary, by the way, is Tuesday, the 15th. So Monday and Tuesday, and maybe even Wednesday if it goes well, we'll be going back and going through a lot of the early days. I don't know about audio. We might even dig up some audio from the old show, but just some good stories. And just the how did this happen? Who were the key players? And, you know, I was thinking about it. I was trying to make some notes the other night. And, God, I'd forgotten about a lot of things like Fred McLeod being in the show when we started. And TC and all the guys in Sky Crib, which was quite a lineup. TC was amazing. He was great. He was a big part of what we started doing. And, of course, Mr. Stress and Bob Boner. Before we really got away from the characters so much. But, you know, radio in 1992 in Detroit was so character-driven. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much you listened to.
Oh, yeah. A lot of it.
You know, there was on Wheels, you know, it was Learn to Spell with Darnell every day at 8:08 and, you know, 6:50 or whatever. Mr. Stress was at 7:50 and Bob Boner would be at 9:10 or something. It was all the clocks were arranged.
I was going to say you had bit clocks that you had to adhere to.
And what we did was eventually we dropped the bit clocks and we just drove through a big hole, which was, in my opinion, the hole was to do some wide open radio that was not scheduled and wasn't the same thing every day at the same time. Benchmark radio, they call it. And I notice a lot of people are going back to benchmark radio. Everything goes in cycles. We were talking about Chicago radio the other day, which used to be, in my opinion, was some of the coolest stuff in radio was going on in Chicago, especially in the Loop. The Loop AM 1000, when John Brandmeier was taken off, and Kevin Matthews and Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer. And I used to listen to those guys when I came home from college in the summertime. And I loved those guys and learned a ton listening to them.
He had what, Casey out of St. Louis?
Casey out of St. Louis was big. Yeah, J.C. Corcoran was doing a morning show there.
Yep.
Oh, you listen to Casey from Springfield?
Yep.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, you're halfway between Chicago and St. Louis, they could pick up.
Yeah, Casey was Casey still is a huge station. In fact, John Hewlett, the U-Man.
Yeah.
You remember the U-Man?
A little bit. A little bit. It was a while ago for me.
The U-Man got in a lot of trouble. He played something off an album, the Woodstock album, that said bombing begins, you know, in 10 minutes. And it played like I think it was supposed to be the equivalent of the Emergency Broadcast Network. But it was a joke. It was an obvious joke.
Yeah.
And the competition sent a complaint to the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, they didn't openly say, hey, this is from, you know, KBBB.
Right.
They acted like it was just some John Q. citizen. I thought that the country was about to be bombed when I heard this. And I don't know if they had audio, because if you heard the audio, there's no way you would. I mean, it was pathetic. It was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
He got in a lot of trouble. He was suspended. He lost his job as the Cardinals PA announcer.
Mm-hmm.
And John was just going through this when Zip and I did a one-week audition at KSHE.
Really? Okay.
So, yeah, John was in timeout when we did that. But he worked with us anyway, and the guys that did the show, the Daily guy, the main host, was on vacation. We didn't know that, though. We thought he'd been fired.
Shit.
So that's why the whole building turned on us day one, because they liked this guy. And they kind of knew they weren't told what was going on, but they figured it out. So, you know, we couldn't get the production studio. Oh, nobody's got the key. Sorry. Oh, yeah, it was really bullshit. But we worked our asses off, and I thought we had a crazy week there. And by the end of the week, we were getting along great with John, the U-Man,
mm-hmm.
who just celebrated his 40-year anniversary there.
Shit.
He passed Penn Hollow.
Amazing.
Penn Hollow was, I think, 39 years at WRIF, and John Hewlett just started his 40th year at KSHE. And I don't know who he's working with now. Actually, there was a guy there named Carl the Intern, who was he had been an intern for like 2 years, and then he became a full-time employee, and they still call him Carl. They still call him Carl the Intern.
Really?
He's still there.
It's stuck. Yeah, name's stuck.
Yeah.
It's great.
And one of the things that happened that week was they had just had that incident where Axel chucks the mic, you know, thanks for the lame-ass security.
I'm going home.
That happened at St. Louis Riverfront Amphitheater, I think it's called. And there was a lot of damage to the theater after he did that. People just went crazy, had a little mini riot. And I guess it was a couple nights after that. I think it was the Sunday night. We were supposed to go on Monday morning, so I had to go in and look at the board. And Carl, the intern, was showing me, you know, oh, here's the microphones, here's your CD players, whatever. And after we left, the overnight guy, who I just met for the first time, had received a call from Axl Rose. And he didn't know how to record a phone call in the studio.
Oh, shit.
So he talked to him for 5 minutes. He's like, thanks a lot, man. And they went on the air and said, yeah, Axl Rose called. And he said, but didn't record it. Didn't put him on the air live. And I believe he said that he was afraid. And this story got a little bigger as time went on.
Mm-hmm.
That he was drunk and he was afraid he was going to swear on the air. So, and he didn't know how to record him. So they lost.
I can kind of sympathize, though, because that's kind of what happened with Andy Dick here. Just taking a shot, calling him, remembering I was upstairs.
Oh, yeah, no.
And Andy picks up, and I'm like trying to stall him to get down here, and then, yeah.
Yeah, well, stuff like that happens. In his case, well, we always felt that overnight people really didn't want to deal with our problems, because we'd come in on Monday morning and the phones are out, and be like, yeah, it just went out 5 minutes ago. And actually then you find out they'd been out since 11 o'clock, and nobody wanted to bother the engineer. So, of course, we'd wake the engineer up at 10 to 6 and be like, oh, man, I'm not going to be in there till 8:30. Can't you deal with it? Like, oh, no phones all morning? Great. So, yeah.
Well, thanks to the lame-ass security, I'm going home.
I could not imagine being in that band with all that going on.
And he just fires that thing at the ground. I love that. I kind of like do you have the dance mix version, the whole thing, where they're the band, where they stop?
Oh, yeah.
And the band plays that little boogie music while Axl dives into the crowd.
It's right during his chorus. He gets all pissed at the guy in the crowd.
There's Duff! Axl with the boa, the police hat. Now he's yelling at the guy in the crowd. He's taking his picture. I'll take it, goddammit.
Yeah, this will end well.
He dives in. I mean, he really puts his arms out like it's a swan dive. Now it's music to fight to.
Everybody's just standing around.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, you know, can't even see him. He's, they're below the crowd fighting on the ground. I think, oh, Axel just popped up. And now there's the guy with the boa fighting his way through the crowd. He's just shoving people like an asshole up on the stage.
If he did that in this day and age.
Oh, I know. No, it'd be ugly. Somebody hands him the mic.
Well, thanks to the landmass security, I'm going home.
I love it. Well. Slash waves. Good night, everybody. Oh, man.
Yeah, they were a mess out in California. Well, Axl was a mess in California. We were talking about seeing big bands in small venues, you know, when Paul McCartney played out in the desert there.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were, Axl was just a drunken mess both times we saw him out there. So about just like what you saw there.
Oh, what show was that, Jay?
The
Paul McCartney.
Oh, you remember after he played the, remember out at Joshua Tree, we called the guys?
Oh, that, oh, okay.
Yeah, out at the bar out there.
Yeah, I'm trying to text somebody about the website and think at the same time. Sorry about that.
No problem.
I thought you were saying you went to a Paul McCartney show.
Oh, no, no. But you're talking about, so 25th anniversary. I mean, does it feel like it's been 25 years?
You know, I think it does, actually.
It does,
which,
yeah,
is weird. You know, people say, oh, there goes my little bit. Sometimes it seems like it went fast, but then when I think of all the stuff, it seems like 25 years. Sometimes it seems like more than 25 years.
Because, I mean, shit, you guys brought in Bobbitt and that really exploded things. And, I mean, even, I'm just trying to think. I'm sure people email or social media and their favorite memories of it. But
you know, that's a great idea, actually, if people want to email in stuff that you have interest in hearing about. You know, maybe I could make a list of things. That's funny that you mentioned Bobbitt because, yeah, I was going to mention this, too. Every time Mike Clark would talk about when the show took off, he would always reference John Bobbitt, like it was John Bobbitt that so made the show take off.
Yeah.
And I would always roll my eyes because, like, don't say John Bobbitt. He didn't fucking do anything. He was here one day. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Bobbitt was a cool deal because we were just kind of, I mean, our ratings were really starting to fly up. And when we brought Bobbitt in, naturally, every TV station came in and filmed the whole show. And, you know, the newspaper writers from the Oakland Press, the Free Press, the News, all those guys were in, you know, the scribes with their notepad and pencil or pen or whatever, like the old days. And we got tons. I mean, it was like the lead story on some stations that night. And we had a lot of fun with it. And Bobbitt's the gift that keeps giving. He's still giving.
Still.
And we've had him on the podcast, for crying out loud. But, and you know, it's always the same.
Yeah, you always know what you're going to get with him.
Yeah, he's one question behind you. He's answering the question you asked 20 seconds ago.
Well, because remember, you talked a lot, though, about how you started thinning out the song format, having to play music, and it became more and more talk, less and less music, until it died off altogether with the upper brass. You know,
right. When we'd been purchased by Greater Media, there was a lack of management. No, I'm going to say lack of management. There was an absence of management. Everybody was scrambling for, you know, what am I going to do? Because managers in those situations, managers are the ones that really have to worry more than anybody. If the station's doing fairly well, they're not going to screw with the talent. Not too often, for the most part. If you're doing a good show, you're either going to get, they're either going to keep you or you're going to get a job at the competition because, oh, you know, somebody's going to want that show. And while management was scrambling, we started dropping songs, and it was something that we should have done sooner, probably. And it was something I thought was missing because, like I said, it was all benchmark radio. It was all character driven, and everybody played music. You know, maybe in some cases five or six songs, but they played a lot of music. And I thought, you know, if we just had the space to do what, Brandmeier and Dahl and Howard and Bob and Tom in Indianapolis. There were just a few shows. I mean, really just a very few shows where we're doing all talk. And I thought if we had that freedom, if we could do that, that it would catch on. It would just, it has more of a, I think it's easier to get people hooked on the show. When you're only talking 10 minutes an hour or 8 minutes an hour, it just takes so long for the audience to know you and to know what you're doing and to build that relationship. Yeah, to build that connection, for sure. And so we built it when the station was between management. And there was a lot of shittiness in there, too, which I'll get into, because that's all kind of fun.
Plus, you didn't, you were holding away from doing syndication and whatnot, like a lot of people did, so...
That was a little later.
Yeah, later on.
But and still. It seemed like every time that came up, there's a funny story about that too, in relation to when Howard left for Satellite, CBS was looking for somebody to replace Howard, and that was a big deal. And they had hired some people to cover certain parts of the country, I think, and they were looking for someone to do Chicago, Detroit, and Cleveland. And so these were some big brass. I can't remember the guy's name, the main guy. If I said it, people that know the broadcast industry and the important management types would know this name. This guy was a big deal. He was one of those powerful people in radio. And we're talking to him, and we were in the middle of a contract, so we couldn't do anything anyway. I mean, there's nothing we could do, but they wanted to talk to us, and they didn't know that. And I think Mike Novak just thought, well, it'd just be good to talk to him anyway. I mean, it's certainly going to help you at the negotiating table, or you would think. And so... when it became apparent we were talking about Detroit and Cleveland and Chicago, we were certainly the show to do that. There was no doubt about it. We just couldn't do it right that minute, but we still continued to discuss it. And anyway, at the end of the interview, they started throwing some names out, like, well, what would you think of this guy? You know, specifically for New York. And New York would cover Philadelphia and the East Coast markets Howard was in. I mean, New York was the big job. That was what they really had to worry about.
Jersey.
Yeah, well, Jersey was covered, I think, by K-Rock, but I think they were on a Jersey, big Jersey station, too, because Jersey's a huge market.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that all that East Coast and Baltimore and Washington, D.C., and I think Howard was on in Boston. So
Boston, yeah.
That job was so big. And they start throwing, you know, they're telling us about some of the people that had talked to them, that had come to them, and I think they mentioned Ted Nugent and, like, Whoopi Goldberg. There were some weird names. John Stewart was the guy they wanted, and John Stewart thought that he had so many writers on his television show, Politically Incorrect, that he couldn't imagine, he couldn't figure out how could I do 4 hours if it takes me, you know, 9 writers to do 22 minutes a night. He just thought it was too much. He didn't like the volume. The idea of doing 4 hours a day was just too much for him. And I've heard him say that on other occasions too, referring specifically to Howard. And then eventually, they threw out David Lee Roth. And David Lee Roth had been rumored to be up for that job. And I think David Lee Roth may have even gone to them at one point. And we had just had David Lee Roth in the studio. And David Lee Roth was, I don't know if you remember this, but David Lee Roth came in and played music.
Yeah.
He had a band, like, you know, 3 guys, I think. It was like one guy playing bongos and one guy playing, maybe 2 guys playing acoustic guitar. And he was singing, and they did Panama and a few other songs. It was kind of a unplugged-ish version. And yeah, I love those drops. God, singing. The ones where he's not really singing are the best ones. There you go.
Yeah.
Some of his stupid one-liners. Mike had a, oh God, what was it? It was a transcript of his in-between song commentary at a Vegas show he did.
Okay.
Oh my God, was it? I mean, it was so bad. The jokes were so horrible. I don't know where he gets his humor from. But anyway, when Roth came in and did that appearance in the studio, the one thing that was frustrating about it was, I mean, the music was great, and, you know, he's a great guy, and everybody wants to hear what he says, but he doesn't. But we had a lot of questions for him, you know, all the wacky hijinks and craziness that had gone on in Van Halen, and some of the music stuff. I mean, there was just a million things to ask him. We never really had a good chance to sit down with David Lee Roth. We had interviewed him on the phone before. So we tried to ask him questions. We tried to ask him a lot of questions, but unfortunately we didn't get to ask him that many questions. And when we asked, he never answered any of them because he doesn't listen. Yeah. It's like he's, I mean, he doesn't listen. I don't know if he doesn't have any hearing, if his brain doesn't process other parts of the conversation besides his own. I don't know what the problem is, but he is maybe the worst listener I've ever interviewed. I mean, just horrible. And it wasn't that the thing wasn't entertaining, because he was entertaining, but you could not. I mean, there's some really simple things I wanted to ask him, but first of all, he was so busy trying to make a joke out of everything that you couldn't really get a serious question in. And second of all, it was kind of like he had certain things he was going to say, and he just came in to say them, and he was just going to, they were going to spew out. No matter what you said, those things were going to come out.
It's like he had his own agenda.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've got my own script. This is what I'm operating off of.
And I don't think it was that it was he was trying to avoid necessarily anything. Yeah. He just doesn't listen. Mm-hmm. So when they asked about David Lee Roth, I started saying that, well, we just had him in, and my problem with him is he doesn't listen. I think he'd be terrible. Mm-hmm. And after this conversation went on for a couple minutes, Mike Novak was kicking me, and Mike thought that they'd already hired David Lee Roth, so he wanted me to shut the fuck up.
Right.
And so I kind of got the hint. But then I think it was like 2 days later they announced that David Lee Roth had been hired for that job, and I think he was there a month.
Yeah, I could see that.
It was. Do you remember that? It wasn't long. I mean, it was
not very long at all.
Yeah, very brief. They gave up on it fast.
It was like the Chevy Chase show, you know, was short.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, I was thinking that it was probably the shortest-lived celebrity talk show in history, but Chevy Chase may have been worse. That was, God, you know, isn't that amazing that you take a big name like that, and that's what I tried to tell them, and I'm making myself sound like I'm a big hero or I should be in radio management. It's not the case at all. But they asked, you know, who would you hire if you had to take that job? And I said, I would hire the best radio show that's available, whether they're in, you know, Fayetteville, North Carolina, or they're in bumfuck Alaska, or they're in Los Angeles. Because if you put a great radio show in there, and they go in and pound it day by day by day, they'll connect with the audience, and you'll have a success. Mm-hmm. But if you just go, because they were all, everybody that was connected to that job was a name. You know, it was just a celebrity, and Roth was one of them. And they had said, well, you know, we'd love to do that, but we need a name because Howard is a national celebrity. And so if we just hire some unknown radio show, you know, we'll be laughed out of New York. And I completely disagreed because that show, whatever it is, within 6 months, they'll start connecting with the audience and people will get it. Mm-hmm. They'll know it's a good show. And they were adamant they had to have a national, star. And so they got their star. And I don't, you know, honestly, I don't know what they're doing after Roth. I'm not sure what happened to K-Rock. I'm sure. Yeah, check out K-Rock New York. They may have even changed format now. They're probably doing disco or something. I think they did go to some teen, like 12 to 24 format eventually, because they hired some guys from Detroit, like from 95.5 to work there, if I'm correct. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, that was all crazy. We'll get into more of that on Monday and Tuesday. And again, if you have something from, you know, the old days, specifically the 90s, I thought early 90s would be kind of interesting because it's the farthest away. But, you know, anything from the Riff days, again, Tuesday is the 25-year anniversary of the first day at WRIF, which was November 15th, which is a crazy day in and of itself, as was November the 14th, because the person that was going to help us get over, transition from the Ken Calvert show to our show, was Lynn Woodison, and she quit on the 14th, the day before we started. So that was, I remember when she quit. It's like, oh, so, you know, we don't have our transition. Oh, okay, I guess we're kind of on our own there. Oh, well. We had Fred McLeod, though, and Nick Demos was there, who died a few years after that. And TC had been on the show for a long time, and Mike had been on doing characters. So it wasn't like we were completely blind, but it would have helped.
Looks like K-Rock's, they're playing Queens of the Stone Age in Linkin Park right now, Green Day.
Does it say who's doing the morning show?
Let me look up the station. I have to look up the
personalities.
Like, I'll try.
So they're still rocking.
Yeah. I'll have to see. But God, I mean, you're just talking Monday, Tuesday. It's almost like you could have a week or more of.
Well, we might go a week. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, depending on what else is going on and how much people want to get into it. You know, I'd love to get some email over the weekend. If we have a good response, you know, maybe we'll to dedicate a little more time to it. I thought we could do maybe like part two on the 25-year thing and part one on what's going on today. But maybe we'll just blow out a couple days on it. There's just been a lot of stuff going on. I'm trying to think what else. Relating to Trump, Trump and Hillary is still worth talking about. There were a couple things I wanted to mention real quick. Oh, one. like I said, there's so many stupid things going on. First of all, Alec Baldwin is not going to do Trump anymore for Saturday Night Live, which I think is too bad because he was good.
Yeah.
I don't know who's going to do it, but I don't know if he has other things going on or if that was just enough for him or he just, I don't know, he's a pretty big star to give up his Saturday nights. I mean, that's probably a pretty good hunk of his week to do that because you got to do a lot of rehearsing and I don't know if he's getting into the writing or not, but a lot of time getting made up and certainly at least your Saturday is gone and you're probably your Friday too. And Dave Chappelle is hosting Saturday night, so that is going to be, I would imagine, one of the most watched Saturday Night Lives in quite a while.
Absolutely.
Well, certainly the, oh, and it's the first post-election SNL. That's going to be a huge Saturday Night Live.
It is.
And I don't think Baldwin's even doing this Saturday. Maybe he'll do one more. Anyway, Chappelle, I mean, we've been waiting for this forever.
Yeah, he's been dormant for so long.
I swear, since he turned away from the $50 million from Comedy Central, it seems like he has been totally missing in action. He has done shows. Mm-hmm. He's done The Fox, I believe, a couple times, and I've heard some strange reviews, some really good, some not so good, but it's still Dave Chappelle, and he did a show like that, not a live show specifically, but a show certainly somewhat like SNL. You always would think that he'd be the perfect guy for that show. And I'm sure he'll bring a ton to play with, and they'll certainly have a lot of great ideas for him. That's the kind of thing that could either be really good or could not fall on its face, but just be disappointing. And it's going to be very high expectations, which is the hard part for him. Because I got the feeling that's what made him turn away from that big deal was it just freaked him out. Because people just went crazy. $50 million, oh my God. What's he going to do worth $50 million? I'm sure he makes a lot of money anyway. But yeah, that's going to be a big deal this weekend. Then Carmen Harlan's Last Night is tonight, so you probably won't hear this in time to catch Carmen's farewell. But 38 years at one station, WDIV, that is absolutely incredible.
Yep.
I don't know if you should count it as 38 years. It's probably more like 33 years because the last 7 or 8, she hasn't been working that much.
I wonder how you're going to lay that out.
I don't think they're going to get real fussy about it. I think they're giving her 38. But I heard from a couple people over there that she really was working about 6 months a year the last few years, and I don't know how true that is. I think she wanted to leave sooner, mm-hmm. and so they just made it so easy that she couldn't turn down, you know, a few months of vacation, 5 or 6.
She's got any plans after retirement? Is she going to still do anything? Or
I don't think she's doing shit,
just
really.
Just calling it quits, yeah, flat out?
I wouldn't look for her podcast. I might be wrong. Maybe she's working on a donate button right now.
Yeah, you never know.
I doubt it. I think she's going to hang out. I think she's got a bunch of grandkids, and she's going to enjoy herself. And she seems like the type that would, too, so God bless her.
Yeah, good for her.
And then, today, People Magazine came out for the week. I meant to go pick up the tabloids and stuff, and I completely forgot. We just had other stuff in our mind, but People Magazine has Trump on the cover, and it's one of those, the president-elect Donald Trump, and it's, you know, he's waving, smiling. And where this started, I have no idea, but kind of spacing on his name. Oh, John Cryer, Ducky.
Yeah.
Ducky. Of course, he's probably much better known from 2.5 Men now, and I just read his book a while ago, and I thought he was I think he's a good guy, basically, but he really has gone off the rails. He wants to start a boycott of People Magazine for putting Donald Trump on the cover.
God.
And he's actually got his name on this, and it was getting quite a bit of activity this afternoon. But I can't help but say, this is so stupid. This is right up there with, I think it was Snoop. It might have been Snoop. If I'm wrong, I apologize. Somebody was suggesting an economic boycott of all the states that voted for Trump. Now, yeah, I mean, I don't even want to get into how stupid that is. Why? Whatever. Anyway, well, I think this is even dumber, though. Boycotting People magazine. Who are they supposed to put on the cover? For fuck's sake, come on.
Why can't people have like a reverse boycott? Somebody, John Cryer calls that out, then just boycott everything he does.
That's the first thing I thought of, Jay.
Yeah.
But and then I thought, you know what? It's just... You're just sort of playing the same game.
Yeah,
almost.
You're right. But it's just.
But that's what he deserves.
It's like the quickest way to shut him up. You know what I mean? People that do that kind of stuff. Boycott this, boycott that. Just.
I'm so tired of this whole business of punishing everyone.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think the way I like, you're being punished. You should be economically boycotted and you should not be allowed to make an income because I don't like you. I don't like what you've said.
Well, you know, and then all these celebrities, I know we beat it to death, but, you know, threatening to leave the country, you know, if so-and-so doesn't get elected and whatnot.
We passed a law, by the way, where if you say that, you have to leave?
That's just it. Yeah, just to make that crap stop, you know.
Wouldn't that be fun? I mean, the coverage of them leaving, getting to the plane, taking them out of the country for the last time.
And they're in tears or they're shouting and screaming and whatnot.
They're trying to fight back the tears so bad. They're trying to smile, but they're bawling their eyes out. That'd be great. God, that'd be fun. Nope. Chris Christie got the boot from the Trump organization, and Mike Pence will handle the transition. And I think Chris Christie, I guess this is over the traffic gate or bridge gate or whatever the fuck it's called. He sternly denies it, absolutely insists he had nothing to do with it. I never believed him. He had three aides that were on trial this week, and I believe they were found guilty. And that was one of the most bullshit things. I mean, speaking of retribution, because the guy didn't endorse him as mayor, they decide to just completely fuck up the morning commute for a couple of weeks. I mean, that was just rotten. I mean, to try to injure your constituents because of a political thing, yep. He should be more than kicked off the transition team. He should be kicked out of the country. I want everyone punished and kicked out, economically boycotted. And booted from the country, damn it. But yeah, that was just bullshit. And I guess, I don't know, Trump seems like a kind of a forgiving guy.
Mm-hmm.
At least with his own people. I mean, he certainly has to be forgiving because he has to forgive himself of a lot of stuff. I don't know if it really gets that far. He gets to personal forgiveness. But he seems like the second chance kind of guy.
Yeah.
I mean, when that eating machine was Miss Universe, he gave her a second chance.
Well, kind of related here a little bit. We're talking about like you mentioned about Trump sending his private jet around to go wrestle up these celebrities that threaten to leave the country, and he'll fly them on his plane.
Oh, God, out of the country. Be funny as hell.
But then you were talking about how Barron would be pissed about downsizing from his floor on Trump.
Well,
down the White House, but now Trump has to fly on Air Force One instead of a private jet.
Well, you think it's a come down from his jet?
It's probably a step down.
It might be. And by the way, the media just went apeshit because when he flew to D.C., he did not invite a pool of reporters, which is what the president-elect does. Basically, everywhere he goes, there's a pool of reporters who travel with him. And I think people were asking him, what's going on? I mean, you flew with anybody? Are we flying back with you? Or how are you doing that? And it was just basically no. No one is flying in a pool on my plane. Fuck you. And I assume he's got to be flying a government plane now, right? Is the president-elect?
It's available to him, so I don't know if it's mandated yet or not. But
that would be really funny if he's flying his own plane anyway. He's got a jet at his disposal from the federal government, and he's using his own plane. I wouldn't be surprised if he is.
I wouldn't either. Well, I was also wondering if he's going to like really. Go nuts on redecorating the White House just because he could.
Oh, everything's gold?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, can you imagine how tacky the White House would be if Trump gets his hands on that place? And that's one thing there can be no argument about Donald Trump in. He has some really gaudy taste. Mm-hmm. Really gaudy. Pretty bad, if you ask me. I'm sure some people think it's great. But it's gold, 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 money, 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 money.
Yeah.
Anyway, the media, he certainly is no fan of the media. I don't know how they're going to solve. I don't know how they're going to sort this stuff out. But there are certain things about Trump that I don't think he's going to fly straight with certain things or people when it comes to being the president. He's going to make his own rules. As far as reporters, though, you've got to have reporters with the president. I mean, that's pretty much. I don't know that.
I don't think so.
Maybe not. I mean, he blew him off twice. I would imagine he'll come around on that. It just depends on how much does he. does he really hate the media, and how much of it is, you know, trying to sort of spin things? I don't know. I think there's probably a pretty deep dislike of the media. He's not the most forgiving guy in terms of, you know, if you cross him, he's going to hit you twice as hard. And the media, you know, some of these big papers like the Washington Post and New York Times, I mean, they had 10, 11 reporters working on him around the clock. And he does create a lot of material, and he certainly had a lot of crazy shit that was worth looking into. And I'm wondering, too, what else is there to find out about Donald Trump? You know, like some of this charity stuff, you know, buying a $6,000 portrait with charitable funds and paying lawyers with charity funds. Does this stuff just get suspended till he's no longer president? I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah.
A little complicated.
That's going to be a mess.
And that tax return, too. At some point, they're going to finish that. What happens then? There's a couple. No, not a couple. There's a bunch of impeachment petitions going around.
Of course.
I'm not sure what the basis of an impeachment would be. I don't think it's going to be. Well, I guess they can impeach you for anything if they believe these sexual assaults. I mean, could they impeach him on the basis of 12 sexual assaults? I guess they could. If they want to have an investigation. I mean, that. If you want to really fuck this country up, I would say, yeah, go ahead and do that. But don't we want to just try? I mean, please, Trump, please try to bring this country, try to be a unifier. I know it's going to take an awful lot for him to do that.
Yeah.
But because some of this protesting, I sort of feel like, you know, he hasn't been in office for one day. And I know it's really based on things that he's said in the past and certain things that have gone on in his life. But it seems to me with him being elected, at least can he govern for maybe 6 months and see what's going on before we go completely apeshit about this? I don't think anybody's listening to me, but we'll see.
Well, like, what do you? I don't want to go too deep in the weeds on some of the stuff, but like, shortly after Bush took office, September 11th happened. So, you know, he's got all of his agenda in order, what he wanted to do, and then that happens. So that changes everything. I just wonder how Trump, you know, maybe even versus Hillary, not to make it a one versus the other, but what if something significant happened? You know, how you think he would handle it?
I don't know. You know, I wonder how ready he is. You know, he's the kind of guy, what he does, being a businessman like he is, I mean, I would think he's probably a pretty damn organized guy and probably makes a lot of lists and has a lot of delegation going on. And he's certainly an executive. You know, being the president is certainly the ultimate executive gig, but I would think he certainly can do all the mechanical things, although I don't think he ran a great campaign. I mean, although, you know, he fucking won.
Plus, he's got
what can you say?
Well, plus he's got a Congress to contend with now.
Yeah.
Compared to, you know, the business world that he's in, that he's used to.
And, you know, although they're all Republicans, I don't know how friendly that's going to be. I think those people, I have a feeling the Republican Party probably wants to get their act together and make things happen. Because midterm elections are not far away. And if you remember Bill Clinton in 1994, boy, things turned on him fast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The 94 elections were a huge upset for him and a real fast message that he better pull himself together. And with all that's going on now, all these protests, he hasn't even taken office. 2 years from now, and you could turn the House and the Senate around in a big, big hurry, and things could get very, very difficult. So, you know, they need to get off to a good start. The first 100 days, generally, the president gets a lot of things done. And I don't know what he's going to do. I really don't. I mean, do you just go and build that wall right away? I heard today he was saying that there were a couple aspects of Obamacare that he likes.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a 180. This wall, by the way, these kids chanting, middle school kids chanting, build the wall. And the cops called. I guess we talked about that a little bit, though.
There was a story, too, that I don't know if you saw it in the it was about some of the illegal immigrants are saying, you know, you don't need to build the wall. We don't want to come to America anymore.
Yeah, there aren't that many people trying to get in.
Yeah. You know, we'll see. With Trump taking office, they have less desire to come, apparently.
That's an expensive wall.
Yeah.
So what else is going on? There are a few other things. Let's see how far in. We're an hour in. I guess we don't have You don't really want to go that long tonight. Jay's already been working on the website for 2 hours, and now, by the way, you finding out stuff? Any glitches or anything? Little bugs. I know there's going to be a few.
There'll be a couple. We'll get them worked out, though, for sure, here over the next couple days. So,
did you check the phone deal?
That's what I'm trying to find out. It's working on the one that I tested here, so I'll check a couple more things. But you can always go to it on a laptop or a tablet or something like that. Try it there.
Right. People love their phones, though, so obviously some people are trying the phones. I know we got 13 people checking in on that. I'm just excited as hell that 13 people are trying to donate. That's great.
Yeah.
This is great news. This is really great news. Better than donate button. Not really. No, actually, the donate button rules tonight. Curb Your Enthusiasm, a ninth season. And although there's been talk about it, didn't really know that much about it, but Ted Danson and Mary Steenburgen have closed deals to return for the ninth season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David, Jeff Garland, Cheryl Hines, and Susie Essman, which is the loud lady, Jeff Garland's wife. Why can't I think of her name? Anyway, you know who I'm talking about, the curly dark hair. She's funny as hell. I'll never forget the episode where she wants to give Larry a tour of their house. And Larry says no. And she gets so pissed. That was a great, I mean, that's one of those things. I really don't want to tour people's houses generally, but I would never turn one down. But that's Larry David for you. And so, yeah, Curb, man, I don't know what could be better news in terms of television viewing than another season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Can't wait. When is the first one? Let's see. I was surprised to see that Ted Danson has been on 13 of 80 episodes. I thought he was more of a bit player, like had been on just a few. But let's see, do we have a date here? It doesn't say. The best-selling jerseys in the NFL list is out. Ezekiel Elliott is still number one. Number two is Carson Wentz, followed by Tom Brady. I wonder if that business of him telling the world that his wife ordered him to stop talking about politics will affect his standing there. I would certainly be turning my jersey in. Giants wideout Odell Beckham Jr. is fourth, and Dak Prescott is fifth. Mm. And interesting, this weekend, I know Prescott is starting, even though Romo is ready to play. God, what do you do? You're 7-1. This guy, this rookie, is playing out of his mind. But you've got this veteran who has really been one of the best quarterbacks in the league the last 5 years. That's a tough call. You know, you got the hot hand, and you got somebody you would never dream. I mean, a lot of people thought they'd lose 5 or 6 games while he was out. And certainly the guy. But he's been pretty injury prone the last few years. Over the past 7 months, the Cowboys have had 4 players among the top 15 in jersey sales. Elliott, Prescott, Dez Bryant, and Jason Witten. I'm surprised Jason Witten's in the top 15, although he's having another good year. Bryant Witten finished last year at 9-10. Colin Kaepernick, who was the number one selling jersey for a couple weeks, is no longer in the top 15. And speaking of Colin Kaepernick, somebody was calling him out for making a big stink about how he didn't vote, that there was nobody he would vote for, so his protest was to not vote. And it's like, I don't even want to hear about it. I'm really?
It's like, why keep giving him attention on it? I mean, it's just like the Kardashians will go away when people quit giving him attention, you know?
I kind of want to hear about how good a football he's playing.
Yeah.
Which is not real good, by the way. And the NFL, I don't know what the NFL is thinking about right now. Their TV ratings are way down. And the number one reason given was the Colin Kaepernick protest. And I kind of understand that because, honestly, that's one of the first things I said about that was when the game is about to start, I don't want to be thinking about Black Lives Matter and really bad news. And that's what I think about when the first thing people are doing is trying to determine who is taking a knee for the national anthem because they're upset about what's going on in other areas. I want to sit down and watch a fucking football game. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wonder why they want to be thinking about that. Now, obviously, you know, it's just a minute. It's a minute and 50-second song or whatever. But it just seems to me you're mixing up a really good thing with something that is really quite upsetting. And, you know, I'm not being a pussy about it. I just don't think it's helping. I mean, when they said that was the number one reason, I found it a little hard to believe, almost like, really? Can stop watching football but I think I can see that. There's some other reasons too. Bad games. too many nights of football, but
commercials.
Yeah, commercials, like, games going on and on and on.
Yeah.
I noticed on Saturday, actually, and Saturday there's nothing stopping me from watching football. I think the NFL, I swear, if I was running the NFL, I would rather have Saturday than Sunday, even though it's tradition. I'm a little, I'm not burned out from football, but I can't watch as much on Sunday as I do on Saturday because I just watch so much on Saturday. I just don't have as much time Sunday. I'm going to watch a Lions game, of course.
Yeah.
After that, everything is gravy because I got to go see my mom usually on Sunday. Podcast stuff to do, sort of catching up with other things. Got a life. So I just, I don't know. And I think I've certainly developed a hatred for the people running the NFL. It seems like the last few years it's been all about, you know, this horrible assault of this running back's wife. A lot of other guys who are doing stupid shit off the field. Now this year it's Kaepernick and that stuff. I don't know. There have been a lot of things, but, you know, above all, there's a lot of bad games when you play on Sunday night and Sunday and Monday night and Thursday night. How many people can really give up that many nights a week for professional football? How many people have that much time? And then when you watch the games, and it was what I was about to say was about Saturday. I noticed it heavily on Saturday, not so much in a Lions game, but on Saturday. There were so many stoppages of play. There was a lot of injuries in the Spartan game, for example, but there were so many reviews. And I'm watching my team, Virginia Tech, play Duke, and they had five plays. But it just took, you know, like 25 minutes to play 60 seconds of the game.
Yeah,
it just was ridiculous. One of those things where, oh, shit, really? Another dispute? Oh, man. And then between that and the injured players in that Spartan game, then Illinois took three timeouts on the same play. The last couple minutes of that game just went on and on and on. It was just relentless.
Well, that's why I still, you know, that's why I like hockey so much because, again, just the pace of it just goes, you know. And there are the games where you get too many damn penalties getting called and the crowd gets all pissy. You know what I mean? Because that's just the beauty of hockey, the speed of it, you know.
But it is hockey, you know, in terms of action, in terms of attending in person, I've always thought hockey was so fantastic, you know, to be there.
Yeah.
There's nothing like being at a hockey game.
It's great.
And television, you're right, it's really a great game for action. Mm-hmm. But my one problem with hockey is I just wish there was a little more scoring.
Yeah.
I mean, you got so much dicking around and checking and fighting and scrapping and clawing, and nobody can get the goddamn puck in the net. I just get a little frustrated as a viewer sometimes, but it's a great game, of course.
They've got a lot of rules, too, you know, in the crease, and if your skate's in the blue paint area, you know, that even if you score, it gets waved. You know, there's so many things like that they were messing around with, too. So, yeah, it just gets annoying.
I think all the perfectionism in sports is really it's certainly, at a minimum, a double-edged sword, because in baseball, which now is dealing with more and more replay, it just stops the game so much. And some of these delays or decisions, and, you know, I'll watch it the first time and go, oh, yeah, the ball hit him. Yeah, he should take first base for sure. But they're standing there for 5 minutes watching replay after replay after replay. It's like, God, I knew it immediately. And then they'll call exactly what I said they were going to call. And football seems like the same thing. And I don't know about hockey, but probably so.
Well, I remember my grandpa taking me to ball games and whatnot, and you'd be there for, you know, a short period of time, you know, a couple hours.
Oh,
you know,
baseball used to be. Hockey? Are you talking about, or baseball?
No, baseball.
Yeah, yeah. About 2 hours, 45 minutes.
Yeah, something in that range. And now
you could get an hour and 50 game though, if a guy threw a shutout or something.
Right, but then you want to take your kid to a game nowadays, and you know, you got your whole afternoon is shot.
Oh yeah, it's a long day.
Yeah,
it can be a really long day. Those World Series games, I think, were all over 4 hours, every one of them, and they do run a lot more commercials. Hey, did you hear about Google is talking about a new function that will let you unsend emails?
Yeah, I saw a bit of the story. I didn't read all the way through it, but yeah, to be able to,
I mean, that's
like in a certain period of time, you can reclaim it.
Do you know how long you have?
I didn't. Like I said, I didn't read all the way through.
Let me see what if I can on it. Figure out here. I didn't get to read it either, but I just was so excited about the headline. Have you ever sent a really bad email you didn't mean to send or to the wrong person? Jay's smiling. I have a feeling we're getting a yes here.
Years ago, yeah, when you didn't really have email etiquette down quite a bit, you know what I mean? So you just say whatever you needed to say. Then they're calling you into the manager's office, you know, kind of crap. So, yeah, back in the day, I used to throw a lot of email out. I probably shouldn't have.
Oh, you mean you sent it to the right person. You just sent a pissy email.
Yeah, just raging at them, you know, kind of thing. But
if you had a minute, would you have taken it back?
No.
Probably not. Okay.
not back then, but.
Yeah, email can be really harsh. That's one thing about it. I think a lot of nuances you don't get. Same thing with text messaging, which can be really frustrating if you do a lot of it. But worst thing in email is, though, is if you send it to the wrong person. I mean, that's or texting, too. I mean, you can really fuck up. And we had some great examples of it in that story last week. God, that was funny.
Well, and just like you were talking about earlier in the show tonight about people are in their social media blast that they throw out, and then they have to go on this apology campaign, you know, for being overreactive and whatnot. So it used to be the same thing with email back in the day.
Yeah, there was a big apology campaign going on today from, Saturday Night Live guy. He's not on anymore. I think he was let go this year. Was it, I can't think of his, Karan, K-A-R-A-N maybe? I just can't think of his first name. Maybe I have the last name wrong too. But he was bitching out Trump voters, and he took a lot of shit.
Yeah, Taran Killam.
Okay. Taran?
Taran, yeah. T-A-R-A-N-K-I-L-L-A-M.
It's just not a great idea.
Nope.
Oh, that reminds me. I read two or three stories that kept referring to how hard people were crying after the election. Not just kids, but a lot of adults that were bawling their eyes out. And this mother and her three daughters, they went to, what a story. They went to the gravesite of the woman who started the suffrage movement before they voted.
Susan B. Anthony.
I think it was Susan B. Anthony. I mean, they happened to live near enough that they went to her gravesite. I thought that was, that's really nice. That's a really wonderful thing to do. I'm sure it was very educational for the girls. Although the girls were all pretty old. They were voting age. They were in their 20s. And I'm just thinking, I'm just trying to picture this. You know, of course it's impossible. But if, for example, men had not been allowed to vote, you know, until suffrage was 1912 or something. And my dad said, Stephen B. Anthony gave us the right to vote. And would you like to go to the gravesite before we vote? For Donald Trump, potentially the first male president? I'd go, I don't think so, Dad. I don't know if I even want to vote. But, you know, all these women went and voted so excitedly for Hillary. They were so sure they were going to win. That's really, I think, why a lot of people lost it and got a lot of picture of people bawling their eyes out, too. Jesus. It just seems. And I know, you know, if Trump picks three justices who are all pro-life, I think that's really the biggest thing that people have to worry about. I mean, if this worries you, is that abortion could be overturned? Because I just don't think that's a good idea at all. And I'm just kind of shocked in a way that we could even go there.
I'm all for a woman in office, that kind of thing. I don't have an issue with those types of things. But, I mean, what do you think all this crying and complaining is really about? Is it really just about the first female president? Is that the real drive? Because
no, it's hatred of Trump is what it is.
I'm just thinking, what if they got a female president?
Well, no, with a lot of women, it is about they thought the first woman president was going to be elected, and that was a big marker, I think, for females, or so they felt it was really important.
But what if
it's the last reason, in my opinion, to vote for someone because they're male or female?
Yeah, because what if the first female president does a shit job? What if you got a female equivalent of Trump? You know, that was the first female president and whatnot.
Well, I think that's what a lot of people were afraid of. In fact, you know, so many women voted for Trump. That's what just shocked the shit out of people. The hidden Trump vote was women.
Yeah.
Women voted for Trump 42% to 53%. 53% voted for Hillary. 42% of women voted for Trump. And 52% of white women voted for Trump. So that was a bit of a shocker. And let's see, I had a couple other stories. God, Channel 4 did a story on, you know, I was watching Channel 4 for this Carmen Harlan stuff, and which I don't know why I was doing that, but I was. And Kevin Dietz did a story on pimps, which is really funny, you know, seeing them promote this. And Kevin Dietz talking about pimps. What are modern-day pimps doing? And the bottom line is that the whole pimp movement has gone online. These pimps aren't out there offering protection in person. And pimps make, generally speaking, about an average of $75,000 a year. The pimps made more than that.
Yeah, you'd think so.
Yeah. I mean, what's going on, pimping? What are these pimping dudes doing out there? 75 grand. I mean, does that count all the jewelry they buy and, you know,
all the bling,
the accoutrements? One-third of pimps make over $100,000 a year, though. And then, the whores have moved online.
Well, now, is that geographic, though? I mean, like a pimp in New York versus a pimp in, like, say, you know, some small fart town in Oklahoma or something, you know?
Well, that's a good question. I still think it would, for the most part, be online, I think.
Oh, yeah, with online, though, right.
Yeah. Okay. And then people are paying for prostitutes on smartphones and tablets, generally, mostly. Most transactions take place on a smartphone or a tablet. Hmm. So it's pretty much off the street. Then they were talking about one of the big bitches about, I guess, I don't know who they got this information from, but there were apparently there's a lot of people who are very unhappy with their purchases after the fact. And the reason is because the online photos that they're using are, generally speaking, fake.
It's a bait and switch.
Yeah, and the pimps were saying that because of the law, because it's still illegal, they can't use the actual person. So they try to use a body type. I know. I laughed when I heard that. I mean, because Kevin didn't even really question it. But,
yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's a reasonable facsimile thereof. Yeah, right.
And nowhere near.
So, yeah. So they pick these, you know, smoking hot chicks who are damn near nude. And the ones they send don't look half as good. And they referenced the majority of whores are purchased here off of Backpage, Craigslist, Tinder, Grindr. And I think they mentioned a couple others. Then they were teasing tomorrow's. Now, this would be, let's see, was this Thursday's story? What kids are hiding in their phones with Karen Drew? And I think it might have been last night. I wanted to see that story because they showed parents looking at the phone and, like, their eyes would just go, oh. And they were on the, you know, location thing where you can find out where you were.
Right.
And they were finding, this one lady was finding out that her kid had been this one place 15 times. I don't know if it was downtown or what it was, but, oh, man, was she shocked. Then they had a story about a car wash.
Well,
in,
can you go back to that one
for
just a second?
Yeah.
How many times have you ever been witness to where somebody has their phone or their tablet or even just like their laptop computer? Probably not so much at the radio station, but I mean, I've been at gigs where you have presentations, conference calls going on. Somebody's got a webinar, you know, and you have to connect to their computer to see the presentation.
Sure.
You know, and they bring up, you know, their porn history, you know, will flash across the screen or an email
that just happened.
They want you to see. Yeah.
That actually just happened. It was a national story, too, where it might have been, was that local? No, I think it was a national story.
Yeah, wasn't it like an NFLer that was doing a...
Yeah, it was some kind of presentation, and he had Pornhub on his
exactly.
his search list. they had a story about a Roseville car wash where they busted these three guys for selling heroin at a car wash. So the only problem I had with that, really, in terms of, you know, I always try to put myself in the place of these people. You know, God, we're selling heroin at a car wash seems kind of crazy. The biggest problem is that you would have to pay for your car wash to get your heroin. I mean, that's an extra $10 on top of whatever your heroin costs. It seemed kind of expensive, kind of a waste of money. They probably let him go anyway. It was in Gratiot, north of 12 Mile, and the owner had no clue. It was this ancient owner, and it was obvious. They showed these guys, and I don't know if these were the guys or not, but it looked like these young dudes, you know, 19, 20 years old. And then they got this clueless old owner who had no idea what was going on. And there was a can scam, too, like a Seinfeld can scam. I don't know if you saw the episode where Kramer was taking all those cans to Michigan because Michigan pays 10 cents a can.
Right.
And I guess New York pays 5 cents. Anyway, somebody got busted for speeding here with 10,000 cans in their truck. And they were all from Kentucky.
Yeah.
So somebody, I don't know if they just had that rerun down there or what, but they busted some dude. So,
God, can you imagine lugging that many damn cans just for $1,000?
Is yeah,
I know $1,000.
10,000 cans. That's $1,000. That's right.
$1,000. Yeah.
God, I didn't even think about that.
Well, and plus, I mean, back in the day when they first had the returnables, you just take your bag or your box of cans, and the guy's like, how many you got? And you could say any number you wanted.
Right.
But now you got to put them in those machines.
Counters, yeah.
One by one. Can you imagine standing there with 10,000 damn cans?
Well, I'm sure, too, you don't do them all at the same place. So you got to go to four or five different locations.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, what a pain in the ass. For $1,000.
$1,000, yeah.
You got to go to Kentucky to get the 10,000 cans. I mean, does somebody have the 10,000 cans when you go down there? It's still a pain in the ass. I mean, even somebody already has them for you. So
yeah, but back in the day, you could just take a bag. My dad used to go through a fair amount of beer,
uh-huh.
and you just throw them in these black garbage bags. You couldn't see through them, and they would just pile up in the garage.
Of course.
Every time we needed any money, my brother and I just grab a couple bags, go up to the store.
Sweet.
And you just say there's like 300 cans in there or whatever. You just pick a number and the guy was okay with it.
They'd never check?
Never did. Not back in the day.
Well, and how much did you exaggerate?
A little bit, I'm
little
sure.
Bit, yeah.
It's like, that feels like 500 cans. What do you think?
Shame on you, Jay. Hey, there's a new building in London, the newest skyscraper, and it, from above, from an aerial shot, looks very much like a penis. Very much. Did you see this picture?
No.
I know you printed this. I mean, is that a dick or is that a dick?
That is a dick.
Now, the head could be outlined better, I suppose, but yeah. It's really very much. I mean, I can't believe nobody looked at those plans and said, there's one little problem there. Or, you know, maybe if they put some decks out there, they could have spoiled the shape. But
spoil the shape.
I mean, spoiled it. Yeah. Why spoil the shape? My God, it was a perfect penis for crying out loud. Anyway, let's see what they say about this. New 67-story building will tower over many London skyscrapers. Not the heights, getting people talking. Much more. Spire London will be the highest residential building in Western Europe when it's completed.
Well, it's a residential place?
Yes. It does look fairly innocuous from street level.
So you live at the deck?
Yes. It's above the view that's somewhat of an issue. And considering its location, those flying to London City Airport will get a lovely view of London's biggest penis when they land. Its genitalia-shaped buildings are your thing, though. You can even live in Spire London. The 861 apartments inside range from £595,000. Wow, must be nice.
Jeez.
When plans were announced earlier in the year, there was some anger around the controversial decision to have a four-door entrance for social tenants housed in lower floors and private lifts for those living in the more exclusive part. Not cool. There's technically a reason behind the odd design of Spire. The sections of the building are supposed to be pedals. Oh, right.
Yeah, do you live in the left ball or the right ball?
I could see it all catching on. I mean, that's kind of cute. Living in the left or right ball? Or do you live in the shaft? That's really a tricky deal with the, because Detroit's doing this too. They're insisting that certain developers have a certain number of floors that are dedicated to people below the poverty line.
Okay.
Now, the numbers they were talking about too, I think it was like 40% below the poverty line. If you're talking about somebody below the poverty line that much, what they can afford for rent is not much.
Mm.
And you're going to have them in the same building as people who are buying penthouses and, you know, yeah. $300,000 condos. How do you do that? Because, first of all, the people with the expensive condos are not going to want to be in the same building as the below the poverty line people.
Right.
I mean, it's just a snob effect.
Mm-hmm.
There tends to be a little less respect of property, you might say.
Well, still, you work your ass off to have that income to afford a place like that.
Yeah, and you don't want people who might maybe be a little envious of the nice stuff you have.
Or just trashing, yeah, trashing.
Yeah, or you know, I'm sorry, I hate to say it, but public housing tends to not be in great repair. People don't take it, they don't respect it all that much. And I don't know how they're going to do that, because they're insisting on it in a number of buildings, and I thought the numbers were incredibly low, too.
There was a thing kind of related to what you're talking about. There's some tenants out of Trump Tower that are moving out.
Oh, I don't blame them. Would you want to live there right now?
Yeah, that's just it.
If you haven't seen it, they've got dump trucks all the way around it with sand in them for bombers, I guess, at ground level. And then up above.
And for Lady Gaga.
Right, for Lady Gaga to have her protest. And then there are Well, there's a no-fly zone, I guess, within 2 miles.
Yeah, no-fly zone around it.
But how do they protect the upper levels? You know, he's in the penthouse. How do they protect people from sniping into there? I was not clear on that.
He's going to have a lot of patrols out, people watching for stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, the protest outside there, like you said, the dump trucks.
Oh, protest. Yeah, protests round the clock, too. Yeah, I mean, we're talking thousands of people at night just completely jammed like sardines, as close as they can get to the building, chanting, you know, not my president or whatever they're chanting. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that just seemed to me, that's just not fair. I mean, he ought to move out. Yep. It's his building. I would imagine he will have sympathy. I would think he would have sympathy for those people living there, and he makes a lot of money off them, so he really ought to get the hell out of there. And I guess he will, because he'll be moving to the White House. But he seems like the kind of guy that instead of going to Camp David, might go to Mar-a-Lago or
go, see that.
God, I mean, what a life that guy. Why does he want to be president?
Yeah, so Pence will be at Camp David all the time. And
yeah.
That's a really good. I wonder if the other Trump towers are getting the same action. I didn't look, you know, like Chicago.
Oh, yeah, Trump Hotel in Chicago. Oh, yeah, people completely jammed around there. I would think economically he is going to suffer big time. I mean, I don't know how long it'll last, but not just the fact that people are protesting around these places and there's snipers around and dump trucks with sand in them, but you know, even the hotels with all the activity there. Then you take the people who hate the fact that he's president. They are not going to spend $400 or $500 a night to stay in the Trump Hotel. They're going to make it an economic protest. Mm-hmm. You might have the opposite with people who are for him, as long as he's a popular president. I don't know how popular he's going to be. I tell you, we're a long way from knowing that.
Yep.
So let me just wrap it up with the... Well, this story is about the Cubs World Series Parade, which is the seventh largest human gathering in U.S. history. And I saw that, and I thought, wow, it's really that big a gathering? I mean, that one parade, really? And then I thought about it, and I'm like, well, how many more people have been together than 5 million people? That is a shit ton of people.
That is.
So I look at the list, and actually they gave a world list. The largest human gatherings in history. Number 10 is the anti-war march in Rome in 2003, which drew 3 million people. The Hajj pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia in 2012 drew 3 million people. You ever seen that Hajj Mecca thing?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God, is that nuts?
Unbelievable.
Wow. Oh, my. It is just amazing. I mean, that whole structure, that's an incredible deal.
Is.
It's really amazing.
Yep.
You really should go sometime.
I'm trying to remember when it was, but there was a section of it that collapsed. They were doing some work out there, and they had some stuff collapse. I think there's like 40-some people, if I remember, that got killed in that collapse. That's nuts.
Yeah.
So many people out there.
Total madness. There was a Rod Stewart concert in Brazil in 1994 that drew 3.5 million people.
I can believe that. Like those Rock and Rio shows that they did down there in Brazil.
Those are amazing.
Unbelievable crowds.
I'm kind of surprised that Rod Stewart's was the biggest, but whatever. People love Rod. The funeral of Abdel Nasser in 1970 drew 5 million people. Then you have the Cubs World Series celebration, 5 million. World Youth Day in 1995, boring, drew 5 million somehow. The papal gathering in the Philippines in 2015 drew 6 million. Then here's some familiar territory. I think we all remember this one. The funeral of Ayatollah Khomeini in Iran in 1989 drew 10 million. Remember when they dropped the casket?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. But the way they were handling, they're passing the thing around. I mean, you can't pass a dead body around in a casket for crying out loud. Of course he's going to fall out. But what a fucking mess. Yeah. A guy falling out of his casket. Jesus. Talk about getting worked up. Funeral of C.N. Anaduri in India in 1969, don't ask, drew 15 million people. Then the Aberin Festival in Iraq.
That's like a neighborhood in India. So many people that live there.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, there's just, I mean, anytime there's a catastrophe in India, they've got huge casualties just because they have so many people that live there.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. So, ridiculous.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay. The Arbaeen Festival in Iraq in 2014 drew 17 million. I don't know what the fuck it is. And then the Kumbh Mela pilgrimage in India in 2013 drew 30 million people.
God.
I don't know what that pilgrimage was, but if I hear 30 million people are going, I think I'm going to pass.
Imagine the lines for the bathroom.
Oh, my God. That Cubs parade was quite something. I mean, that was a giant crowd. I thought, as I watched it, it was on. God, it took forever. First of all, you got the parade, of course, which takes so fucking long. Mm-hmm. But what I can't believe is just what a bad job, generally speaking, teams do at parades. And I've seen quite a few of them because we've had so many of them here with the Wings and the Pistons and stuff. Mm-hmm. They always spend so much time with the executives and the mayor and all that bullshit at the beginning. It's like, don't fuck with those people. Get the players out there. That's what they came for.
Exactly.
By the time they get the players they want to see, it's like they've been there for 3 hours and they're just baking in the sun. Mm-hmm. And I would have gone home long ago, but whatever. Those fans were crazy.
What do you think the percentage of that parade were either Chicago or, you know, Illinois people? How many of them are out of town, do you think?
How many of them were local to Chicago?
Yeah, just taking a guess.
You know, I bet it was a lot, but there were a ton of people who were so into that. I would think there were a lot of people that came in for that. You think a lot of people came in?
I think a fair amount would have come in from out of town.
I would think so, too. And, you know, even places like, maybe even people from Peoria and places, maybe.
Champaign, I mean, and places like that. Yeah,
people are crazy about the Cubs. And, you know, those last games there, two games, 3, 4, and 5, there were so many people around the stadium. I mean, just thousands and thousands of people just hanging out outside the building, watching a big screen, just wanted to be near it. So they had a blast with that. That was really one of the most incredible sporting things I've ever seen. I feel very fortunate to be a Cubs fan right about now.
But boy, we had long nights here for, you know, the last game of the Cubs. Remember the rain delay for a portion of it? And then, you know, of course, the presidential election. Just big things are taking a long time.
It's been a crazy month. Yeah. Crazy month. Hopefully things will start to settle down a bit. But, you know, we'll do what we have to do. So, again.
What about Leonard Cohen?
Leonard Cohen. Yeah, you want to play Jeff Buckley? I would play Leonard Cohen, but this is the best version, in my opinion, of the best Leonard Cohen song, Hallelujah. This guy was such a great guitar player, Jeff Buckley. A little bit lengthy on the intro. I'm just getting started here.
You said Leonard's just one of those kind of known but not so known.
A little niche-y, but, you know, he wrote some great songs. This is his greatest effort, no question. He was 82 years old. He's a different style. I mean, I kind of want to put him in the Sinatra arena, but maybe a little hipper.
So a lot of people, different people covered this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, tons. Yeah. Every American Idol contestant in history did this song at least once.
With this long of an intro?
No. No way.
Jump it up a bit.
He's a hell of a guitar player, though.
Yes. Do you really care for music, do you? Well, it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah. Faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty in the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to a kitchen chair. She broke your throat and she cut your hair. And from your lips she drew the heart. Walked this floor, you know, I used to live alone before I knew you. And I've seen your flag on the marble arch, And love is not a victory march. It's a cold and it's a broken hallelujah.
Speaking of hallelujah there, Drew, the donations are still rolling in, so.
Sweet.
Certainly appreciate that, everybody.
Yeah, it's a perfect song. R.I.P., Leonard. Thanks for bringing some cash into the podcast.
But I appreciate that. Hopefully everybody likes the new website and the new layout, and obviously send us some ideas. If we got to touch a few things up, let us know.
Yeah, the phone thing is the main thing I'm hearing about.
Yep, I'm going to get all over that.
Cool.
Get it all figured out.
All right, well, we'll catch you Sunday night, and we'll just let Mr. Jeff Buckley... Oh, is this almost done?
Yeah, let him carry us out.
What song they'll play at his funeral? Gee.
Good question.
Same that song? Oh, hallelujah. That's right.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Have a good one, everybody. And again, if you have any ideas for the 25-year, anything you want to hear chatted about, pass it along on email. Anything about the website, too. It's new. There's going to be glitches, of course. But any help you can offer, thank you. And we'll see you Sunday night. Say it.